All right, so now let's move on from medieval times to the Reformation, right? And the primary concern of the Protestant reformers of the 16th century was the doctrine of salvation. So that's what their issue was, right? In their view, the Aristotelianism of the scholastics, right? These are the medieval folks, you know, whose teachings in the 16th century was basically based on the Roman Catholic system, led to a confusion and perversion of the gospel of salvation through faith in Jesus Christ. Moreover, the Renaissance was marked by an infatuation with pagan antiquity, especially Plato and Neoplatonism, and the result was a further corruption of the Christian message in what came to be known as humanism. And so the reformers then, with regard to their apologetics, fought against this particular idea, especially the corruption of the idea of salvation that had emerged out of the medieval time and the Roman Catholic Church.
Right. Right. So you're just still dealing with elements of paganism, but you're also now dealing with elements of Roman Catholicism and also of Islam as well. So the people during the Reformation time are laying on even more onto themselves on how they're responding, how they're apologizing, how, you know, to whom is their message curtailed, and from where do they draw their source for pointing to the truth of the message of God. Well, originally, humanism was essentially an intellectual approach to literature and learning, emphasizing the study of the classics and of the Bible directly instead of through medieval commentaries. Okay. So instead of going through the teacher, you go back to the sources. I wonder if there's a term for that.
Yeah. And so obviously this was depending on commentaries, was the whole idea of scholasticism, right? So in other words, you basically quoted all of the early folks in their commentaries, and that's how you learned, right? And yeah. So this was a movement against just dependent on these commentaries.
And you saw that even during Jesus's day with Talmudic Judaism is always, this teacher is referenced by this teacher who's referenced by this teacher that goes back to maybe Moses, maybe Abraham, but it's to a respected teacher lineage of your ideas. And so when Jesus is teaching, the Pharisees look around and say, who is this man that he's teaching as one of authority? Meaning he's not quoting the people that we quote. So what's he doing? He's saying that he has the truth. He has this knowledge and he's drawing it directly from the scriptures. That's not what we do. And so here again, we're revitalizing that approach that Christ did. Well, by the 16th century though, Catholic humanism, as represented for instance by Irenaeus, was characterized by a man-centered philosophy emphasizing human dignity and freedom at the expense of biblical teaching of sin and grace. And so it kind of got our two realms kind of switched there with what we want to focus on. And so here the Reformation comes forward and says, I think we might have this flipped around where we might want to go back to biblical teaching and then put that into context of how we view things like human dignity and freedom.
Right. And so the doctrine of justification by faith in Jesus Christ alone was the heart and soul of the ministry of folks like Martin Luther, right? 1483 to 1546. He was an Augustinian monk who lit the torch of the Reformation with his 95 theses, protesting legalistic abuses in the church at the time. So in Luther's estimation, reason, particularly as employed in medieval theology, had obscured the gospel of justification. And so he therefore emphasized the limitations of reason and rejected the traditional theological project of employing logic and philosophy to kind of explain and expiate and defend the Christian faith.
Right. Right.
And so we're going to come back to this kind of approach in one of the major methods with regard to apologetics that our book here is going to consider.
Right. And historically, we have to look at, you know, Luther wasn't looking for the fight to knock down the foundation of the Roman Catholic Church. The 95 Theses and the hammering on the door of the famous painting that we can picture in our mind is him just putting up a flyer going, hey, I'd like to really talk about this with somebody. It was the early day podcast is what he was wanting. And so, you know, he had somebody probably take down the publishing that he did. Again, this was around the time where Gutenberg printing press was able to mass produce. And so they took the 95 theses and printed up more and more to kind of start a movement that I don't think he was exactly ready for, but at the same time, he was exactly ready for it. So it's something that we can be grateful for there. All right. Well, Luther admitted that non-Christians can gain a general knowledge about God through reason, discerning that a God exists and that he is good and powerful and the like. However, reason is incapable of helping them know who the true God is or how to be justified in his sight. Such particular knowledge is available only in the gospel and can be appropriated only by faith. Not only is reason unhelpful in gaining a saving knowledge of God, it's actually an enemy of faith. Stop being so reasonable. It's getting in the way.
That's right.
That's probably not the most generous reading of that, but we have to understand things in context and what's being said. And the nice thing about that is these guys like to write and people like to publish them. So so it is out there. And so we can have a non mediated understanding of these people's writings if we actually read them.
Right. Good. So Bohr and Bowman tell us that if Luther was the father and chief polemicist of the Reformation, John Calvin, 1509 to 1564, was arguably its chief theologian. In his Institutes of the Christian Religion and biblical commentaries are still read and discussed today, even by non-theologians, right? And as with Luther, Calvin's principal apologetic labors were directed against the Roman Catholic criticisms of the Reformation gospel of, you know, faith, right? Faith and grace and that sort of thing with regard to the Reformation and the belief that the Roman Catholic Church had.
You know, not bad for a Frenchman who at the age of 26 writes the thing that probably moved most of the Western world into a more positive direction, changed the ideas of how people talked about religion and understanding, kicked off probably wars with it as well. And in his own right, a pretty impressive life before he reaches the age of 30. And then to go on and do more of what he did is pretty impressive as well. Well, unlike Luther, Calvin held that faith is always reasonable. However, he also insisted that faith also seems unreasonable to us because our reason is blinded by sin and spiritual deception. So when we talked about the noetic effect of sin, which at the time of this recording is our second most popular video out, it might be because of the fun cover photo that I gave for it. But that effect of sin degrades our reasoning, and so it puts, you know, a rope around it, and we're unable to reach up and out and fully experience what a unrestrained reason looks like. And so Calvin tries to put in line a scriptural basis for the use of reason, but it's not so outside the realm that they don't touch. Well, here he says that such blindness is evident in the philosophies of the pagans, Romans 2, which at times comes close to recognizing the truth, but in the end always distorts the truth of God's revelation of himself in nature. To remedy our spiritual blindness, God has given us his word in scripture, so there's the specific revelation, which is so much clearer and fuller in its revelation and through the redeeming work of Jesus Christ. God has also given us his spirit, who enables us to understand his word. So there we're given a renewed mind by Christ, and then we're given God's spirit to help enable us to help understand his word, which then helps us to understand more about his general, about his specific revelation, and see the general revelation in a fuller, more complete context with the author of that revelation telling us even more about what we see and experience in the world. And again, from Calvin's Institute, he kicks it off by by having the sensus divinitas that all people have, but still views it as subjected to the presence of sin, and so is distorted. So we're looking at things askew, but we still have some understanding. We don't even have to look at the night sky, but when we do look at the night sky, we in and of ourselves, we recognize that God is the creator. He is there, and there's certain quality and aspects about him. And so he's pointing back to the scriptural motifs that Paul has in Romans as well.
Yeah, good.